Right, now I want you to leave what you're doing and come join me in here. It won't take long. Now, through the magic of radio, we're sitting together in my new car. Modest to be sure, because I work for the ABC, but new nonetheless. Now, what I want to show you is one of the features which I really love because it concerns our next topic, the Internet of Things. Okay, seatbelt on. And I'll just start it up. Now, like many new cars, when I turn over the ignition, the computer in my car does a quick service check, and then it tells me after a few seconds whether anything is wrong. Okay, the computer display has just come up with the words system check OK and a little tick. So, without me doing anything really except turning the key, my car's computer has already done a bit of high-level maintenance. Now, what if there was something wrong? And what if the car's computer could actually diagnose what's amiss and report it to the computer at my local garage? And together, without any human beings being directly involved, the two computers could organise an appointment for me and my car and even book in a new replacement part from the computer at the local car dealer. Well, one day, not too far into the future, all of that could be a reality. The idea of computers talking to each other without our involvement isn't a new one. But with more and more objects becoming computerised, or at least having internet connectivity, there exists the potential for the internet to enter an entirely new phase. A phase where people and objects are all communicating, sometimes with each other and sometimes with their own kind. Dr. David Skellen is the Chief Executive Officer at NICTA, Australia's Specialist Information and Communication Technology Research Centre. And he says the Internet of Things is already on the way, and there will be benefits.
We're increasingly seeing that objects, you know, everyday things we buy, are now smart. So toys, you know, your mobile phone's extremely smart. A lot of appliances that you buy, you know, white goods and so on, have computers in them. Certain clever lighting systems have computers in them. Many, many things around your house. Lots of your cars, of course, even the low-end cars now have, you know, 10 to 20 computers in them. And all of these computers are able to provide lots of information. And moreover, we're moving into the situation where some of these things can actually be controlled.
What's the benefit, the real benefit, for average consumers?
Well, I think the real benefit is that it gives us contact with those things that are around us. There are many, many health conditions that can be monitored in real time, and can, you know, you can have a device, if you do carry around your mobile phone, your mobile phone could actually keep track of your health. It could tell you how much energy you're using. It you wouldn't need a separate device to tell you how far you've walked. It could tell you how much exercise you're getting each day. It could tell you vital signs, you know, your heart rate, your blood pressure, and so on. All of these things could be made available to you personally. And I think that would be a very useful outcome for individuals, knowing when you need to service your car rather than kind of guessing that it's every 10,000 kilometres or whatever it might be.
Does it also, though, mean that society is moving to a point where there will be no off switch, if you like, that, you know, everything will be on?
Yeah, everything will be on. That's exactly right. The issue of whether you want to do anything with it, whether you want to be part of that environment is up to you. I mean, you can choose to, you know, opt out of that and not be connected and not have things monitoring you. And we have to make the internet so that that's the case, so that you're in charge of the situation as opposed to the government being in charge of it.
So if almost every manufactured item in the future will in some way be connected to the internet or be computerised, what are the implications for energy consumption? Won't a world where everything is on simply chew up more of our energy resources? David Skellen again.
This is a really interesting question because it's certainly the case that information and communications technology devices are chewing up more and more energy. And there's a huge effort in the community, in the computer and electronics community, to reduce that amount of energy, to look for lower and more efficient devices. But inevitably, as we have more and more systems connected, we are going to see an increase in the amount of energy that's used. At present, we're looking at moving to 4% over the next 10 years or so of the world's energy will be used in ICT. And I'm not quoting that figure exactly. It's that sort of order of magnitude. Now, the areas that we've been looking at, not just us, but many, many research groups around the world looking at, is how do you use these devices to, yes, they do consume energy, but how can they save energy? And if you look at the payback there, it is really huge. So, for example, a simple example is automatic devices that control lighting and determine when you need to have, and we've seen these already, right? They're around, many of them are already around the place, but we can do much better to know when to turn lights on, when to turn them off, and simple things like that can save a lot of energy. There are much more sophisticated ways you can save energy. So if we take this car example, it turns out that if we could better control the way the engine management system in the car, if we knew more about the surroundings, if we knew, for example, when a light was going to turn on or off, a traffic light, and we let the computer in the car determine that we're actually going to be in a braking mode, then it could change the whole energy system in the car to save energy. And the savings are not trivial. General Motors has recently, we've been talking with a number of companies about this, but General Motors has estimated that you might save 15 to 20%, something of that order of magnitude, in the braking situation by being able to alter the energy of the car and the energy usage in the car during a braking circumstance. So there are lots of ways that you could use the fact that you know what's going on around you because the devices are connected to the internet and communicating that information. Lots of ways you could imagine saving energy.
Of course, in Australia in recent times, the big issue, or one of the big issues, has been the state of our broadband network. What impact could the Internet of Things have on our existing internet infrastructure, and what sort of preparations do we need to start making to lay the groundwork for it?
Well, the internet infrastructure is kind of the fundamental underpinning of this. You have to have an infrastructure that can carry all this information. And I'm very pleased that we're going to soon be seeing an improved infrastructure. It is fascinating that, in fact, the Internet of Things can enable more efficient and use monitoring, maintenance and development of the broadband infrastructure itself. And so there are a lot of measuring devices that can be placed in that infrastructure. One of the companies that spun out of NICTA is, in fact, exactly in that space. It's a company called Monitoring Division, and it uses a clever optical technique combined with some machine learning techniques to be able to measure the impairments on the very high-speed optical fiber cables that are at the core of the internet. At the present time, operators who have these very high-speed cables really don't know to the level of detail they need how their cables are performing and therefore how much information they can send over them at which times. And this technology that we've developed and that Monitoring Division is taking to market is one that enables us to do that. So that, in fact, turns out to be a clever measuring device, monitoring device, that is placed at strategic points around the internet, around the underlying broadband infrastructure, and that information is fed back to the operator so they know how to best deploy and best send the information over the net.
Interest is quite high. The Internet of Things has gotten significant attention around the globe, both from industry and governments. But having been in the communications and internet industry for about 12 years now, whenever I hear the phrase, the next big thing, I always take that with a grain of salt, if you will. You know, there's no doubt that we're moving and evolving toward object identification, that we're seeing implementations of track and trace in particular industries, but we're still very much in the early stages of adoption.
That's Brian Cute. He's the Vice President of Discovery Services for the internet infrastructure company Afilias. And Mr. Cute will be a keynote speaker at a major conference on the concept of the Internet of Things, which gets underway in Brussels in a week's time. The gathering is being organised by the European Commission.
The European Union has definitely taken a forward-leaning position and a lead position in trying to understand what the implications of the Internet of Things are going to be for consumers, for businesses, for the market. They have been very active in developing forward-looking policy frameworks, because when the Internet of Things does become a reality, you do have active sensors in many environments and data collection where you didn't before. Issues such as privacy, issues such as security, even network architecture issues are going to become very important, and governments have a unique interest in making sure that those issues are addressed.
Now, I know privacy is one of the themes that that will be discussed at this upcoming European conference. In a world where objects are increasingly connected, do those issues of privacy become more important, do you think? I mean, is that going to be an area where this whole concept is going to meet a bit of a wall, if you like, a bit of resistance?
You know, I think it's easy to say yes, that when you conceive or picture this, you know, sensor-based world, that privacy suddenly becomes a paramount concern for the individual. But at the same time, the Internet of Things, it's going to evolve in stages. We're not going to wake up tomorrow and be surrounded by sensors. And the other thing that I think is going to change, particularly if you look at the youth segment and how younger folks and the younger generation are using technology. Look at things like Twitter. Look at how young folks are exposing themselves, you know, where they are, what they're doing. We can say, you know, in a vacuum that, well, that's a privacy issue, and maybe it is, but what I'm suggesting is that the next generation coming up, the way they interact with technology, their behaviors, their expectations of privacy will not be the same that we have. So there's going to be a bit of an evolution, both in the technology and in attitudes. And I think that governments, or I hope that governments, will be sensible enough to have a flexible approach to issues such as privacy.
And so I presume you would say that there will have to be an evolution as well in terms of telecommunications regulations.
No doubt, no doubt. And that's another interesting area. The Internet, to a large degree, has become a global facility, an open, remarkable technology that's really transformed the communications landscape because of some key policy decisions that were made at the beginning of the Internet that facilitated that growth. So in the same way, governments have to be very thoughtful about the policies that they adopt vis-a-vis this Internet of Things to ensure that they're continuing to foster a growth, innovation, jobs, all the things that are very important to every country.
Now, we've talked about the approach of government and also research, but how much interest is there from commercial companies in this concept?
Quite a bit. You know, if you look at virtually all of the largest IT companies, all of the largest communications companies have had significant focus, significant investment, pursuing technology implementations, pilots. There's very, very, very strong interest. The question, of course, always in the marketplace is the market ready? What's going to be the first implementation that's going to really get traction? Again, I think this is going to evolve, though. I mean, it'll come in stages. You'll see it in the supermarket. There'll be tagged shelves and tagged products, and soon enough, you know, someone with their mobile phone, you can go in and you can see the potatoes or the cake mix and swipe the tag on the shelf and have, you know, coupons and recipe information pushed to your phone. And I think once we get through that next stage, then the consumer being comfortable with that sort of interaction, the notion of having RFID in your fridge at home doesn't become such a cold, distant, threatening type of scenario. So I think as a matter of stages, consumer attitudes will evolve.
Brian Cute from the Internet Infrastructure Services Company, Afilias.